Welcome to the Wildcast Podcast, coming to you from Wildcast Studios with your hosts, Adam Lund and Jeremy Boucher.
What is up, Moncton? How are we doing? A good old retro, a little bit of a different intro. I figured I'd go intro as well as our new intros because this is a big one. This is our 100th episode of the Wildcast Podcast, your unofficial voice of all things Moncton Wildcats. I never thought it would get here. As always, my name is Adam, and I am joined finally in the studio, but at a safe social distance, your favorite co-hoster, Mr. Jeremy Boucher. First of all, I want to say thank you to you and to Chris who couldn't join us tonight, but thank you guys for helping get this show to where it's been. How you doing, man?
Doing pretty good. We're going to try to not speak moistly on each other here tonight. And
I literally said to Layla, he's going to drop speaking moistly at some point. He's probably got a list of certain quotes he's going to try to get into this show tonight.
Well, I don't got any quotes written down. That's just jumping to the top of my head. But it is great to be back in Wildcast Studios. I've missed you very much. And of course, I've missed Layla as well. It's nice to see four walls that, I haven't seen in 4 months, 3 months,
three
at least.
3 months, yeah.
It's good to be back. I miss talking hockey. So let's get to it. And yeah, hard to believe it's been 100 episodes already. And I know I've probably been, part of it for maybe, I don't know, at least 90% of those episodes. So
probably 80 at least. I think I maybe did 10 or 12 by myself just starting out. Yeah.
So it's crazy. It's been a hell of a ride. And, we'd probably get more, than 100 if it wasn't for, FU COVID, but,
it's
good. Like I said, it's good to be back talking hockey again.
So Netflix, Amazon Prime, regular cable, what are you binge watching? Yeah, we're going to get to the Masked Singer in a minute, but other than that, what have you been binge watching?
Obviously Tiger King. It's been a huge, probably one of the biggest, series to come on Netflix, and conveniently at a great time because that's really when the quarantine started, right? And awesome, really, really awesome. And another one I liked was Too Hot to Handle. Not sure if you guys have got into that yet.
Yeah, she, after we watched the other one, Love is Blind.
Yeah.
She and The Bachelor, she got to her quota of reality type, love type shows. So
this is a little different. They bring in like a bunch of hot singles on an island, and there's a pot, and the pot is worth, I think it was $100,000, and you can't kiss, you can't touch, you can't do the hibbity-dibbity, and if you do, money is taken away from the pot. And you basically have to, the focus on the show is to better yourself as a person, instead of having, just instant bow chicka bow wow, you need to,
right, yep,
gain emotional feelings and towards another person. So, and if you didn't, then you were kicked off the show. So I think there's maybe two or three that got kicked off because they were just total losers and just didn't follow the rules and stuff like that. But at the end of the day, I think there was maybe eight four guys and four girls that were left in the show, It was different, it was more for, obviously more of a more towards the women,
right.
but I liked it. There was some,
the show.
Yeah.
Yep.
Getting into it. It's all based on science and, if you're a good dancer, do you have a higher sperm count and just really scientific things like that. Pretty neat. And, upload on Amazon Prime.
Is that good?
The first couple episodes were interesting, but it's starting to tail off. Right. So I don't know if I'll start. I don't know if I'll continue watching it.
So we watched Tiger King. It's funny how it took a pen. I'm trying to figure out if it'd be as popular as it is. if there wasn't this pandemic and people had other things to do. I think eventually it would have. So that was a big one. The Walking Dead, I got started in that till about season 7. Then I got tired of it. I just kind of lost a bit for me, so I got out of it. Then Scandal. We started Scandal from the beginning. We watched a little bit of that 100. Dead to Me comes out. Well, it is out now, so. But we've been more on the Netflix than the Prime.
Yep.
We kind of watch movies on Prime and shows on Netflix, but I've been big into The Last Dance. Mm-hmm. That was, you know, high school. That was my, I was a basketball player. Every kid wanted to be Michael Jordan. So I kind of wish that one would have come out all 10 episodes at once. But as my affliction for binge watching the shite out of shows, I'm kind of glad it didn't, so that I have something to look forward to every Monday. But you know, let's not keep the people waiting. They want to get the Masked Singer update. I think the last time we talked about it, Bella Thorne was the Swan, which was like 6 weeks ago.
Oh, I don't even, if we're going to say this in order, I don't think
I'll. No, I'm to, just saying that's the.
Oh, the reveals. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So we had the JoJo, who was the T-Rex. Gronk was the tiger. Jordan Woods, no idea who that is, was the kangaroo. You were right on Bret Michaels. I had thought it was Bill Engvall early on, but it was him. You were right on the astronaut.
Of course, I was.
For those who don't think we don't talk about this, we message each other daily, or not daily, but as the show's going on. Yeah, you were right on the astronaut with
Hunter Hayes.
I thought it might be Chris Kirkpatrick. There was a few NSYNC type clues, but and then Miss Kitty was the opera singer that I've never heard of,
Jackie Evancho. Yeah, she was on. She was on America's Got Talent when she was 10 years old, as a singer. So it's I can't believe I didn't pick up on that, because I'm a big America's Got Talent fan. So, and of course Nick Cannon is the host of that show, so you know he knew for a while that it was her. I was just mad that I couldn't figure it out.
So we have the Frog. Who, I'm trying to think who I think it was. The Frog. Who else is left?
Frog, Night Turtle, Night Angel, and the Rhino.
Right. The Rhino we both kind of think is Barry Zito.
Yes. Yeah. The clues are adding up to Barry Zito, yeah. Which is funny because I think that was kind of a guess. It was a way out in left field guess for me. One of the first weeks. But the clues have been lining up. Every single week.
It's amazing what Google can do, because I can't remember what week it was, because there's no days in COVID. You had talked about being Barry Zito, and then he brought up a Vegas thing, and he says it's not what you think. He's born in Vegas, so, mm-hmm. I mean, the kid thing threw us off last week, but then there's Turtle. That's probably the only one we disagree on. I think it's Joey McIntyre.
I think it's Jesse McCartney. So. It's definitely Jesse McCartney. I mean, I'll put $20 on it, like right now.
I'm poor, so I can't do that. But
get your income tax done.
And then the other one was Night Angel, who I have no idea.
It's a lot of TLC hints in the clue pack. I don't think it's one of the TLC singers, though. I think it's somebody that has to do with the band,
right?
Like like someone who wrote a song for them, or a dancer,
yeah.
or something. It's somebody who has to do with TLC. I just can't put a name to it right now.
I think last week I said I was originally going to go with Chili from TLC, mm-hmm. but I think it might be the other one, T-Boz, because Left Eye's passed away, but I think it's T-Boz, because all the clues are leading towards Chili, which is a little too obvious. So I think I said to you it might be T-Boz from TLC.
I think that's it, right? That was the four? Yeah. Oh, Frog we think is Bow Wow. I think it's Bow Wow.
Yeah, and I have no idea, so I'm just going to go with... I thought it might be... There was one week where it sounded like Kevin Hart, but then when they do their rapping, I'm like, nah, it's probably not him. So, but yeah, that's where we're at in our TV watching time. But this show's going to be big. We're excited for this 100 episodes. So why not have some big guests? It's also, conveniently, the Wildcats' 25th season. Would have been nice to put up 3 banners. We're only going to put up 1. Does it feel like that long to you? 25 years?
Uh, Does it feel like 25 years? No, it doesn't. I think the Colorado Avalanche are also going to be celebrating their 25th anniversary.
Yep.
So for you to tell me that, you know, the Wildcats came into the queue the same year as the Colorado Avalanche came into the NHL, I would have thought you were crazy, because my immediate thought would be is that the Avalanche have been around much longer than the Wildcats. So that's, you know, 1996. Like, that's crazy. Yeah, hopefully, you know, Courtney's been teasing some special, guests and stuff on their Friday night chats they've had the past couple of weeks. So, you know, fingers crossed that we can get the season started, you know, on time, if not on time, you know, maybe a month or two, after that, but we'll see what happens.
Well, there's the president of CHL. Dave McKenzie?
Danny McKenzie.
Yeah, he came out with that article that you shared. He's kind of set on trying to get the season started in September, which I find it hard to believe, but I like his optimism.
If it starts in September, I think a lot of people will be surprised, just because, you know, it is a CHL, right? So the Q and the O and the dub kind of have to start at the same time. You know, just make sure their seasons end at the same time. But,
and of course, we're the league without American teams, but Quebec's been hit pretty hard as compared to the Maritimes, whereas in the WHL and the OHL, they've got American markets and border being non-essential, right? Yeah. So, what's your thought? Do you think we're looking September? You think we're looking November or Christmas? Make your trades. Everybody sprint to the finish and let's see how this thing ends up.
My hope is, I'm not competent on September.
Yeah.
I don't think we'll be able to get started in September. I'm hoping for November 1st as a start date. That would be, I mean, at that point we'd probably be able to get in like, I don't know, like a 60 to 65 game seat. Yeah. Cause we play what?
68.
Oh, never mind. My mind's going completely blank. maybe a 50 to 55 game season. So I'm hoping for November the 1st. You know what, but I can see it being as long as, you know, January, that first Monday, that Monday after the World Juniors would end. That's,
World Juniors even starts.
Yeah, which, right? I don't think it's going to happen. But that's that Monday in January, which, I mean, if I pull up the calendar real quick, that would be January the 4th. I think that's kind of their cutoff date, yeah, where, you know, if you're not playing hockey by January the 4th, you know, there's not going to be a season. So, you know what, anywhere from, you know what, September 20th until January 4th, you know, yeah, drop the puck. But anything after January 4th, I'm not, you know, I
think at that point it becomes a little silly to try and,
yeah,
to try and jam a season, yeah, in. But so, like I said off the top, I mean, this is our 100th show. It's got to be big. And, you know, our next guest is one of the best, if not the best, depending who you talk to tend the net for the Moncton Wildcats. He was a goalie that backstopped him to a Memorial Cup berth in Brandon in 2010. He was drafted in the first round, 14th overall, by the Moncton Wildcats. Mount Rushmore goalie, I guess you could call him, Nick Riopelle. Nick, how are you?
Hey, good. You guys?
Oh, hanging in, trying to survive. How's everything going out there in Montreal with the family and that? How are the kids dealing with this?
Well, so far the family is doing very good. I'm fortunate enough that I can work from home, and my wife also. We have two kids. The oldest one being 14. She's doing school but at home. And then the 6-year-old just stay at home. And we're fortunate that my mother, who lives 10 minutes down the road, she takes her to play with her and give us some time, to me and my wife, to work both of our business. But so far, everyone is healthy, and that's what we're looking for.
Yeah, that's the main thing, and that's all that matters. So, I mean, the 25th year, I was just asking Jeremy, does it feel like 25 years of having the Wildcats in the city? But just your time in Moncton, just can you put into words what your 4 years here meant, you know, capping it off with the championship in 2010?
Yeah, it was just, my time in Moncton was just unbelievable. I always told my parents and even my wife now that if I had the chance to go and live in Moncton for the rest of my life, I would go in a heartbeat. Now, you know, we'll see in the future, but my time down there, it's like, it feels like home every time I visit during the summer or I do training camps, or, you know, I go for the training camp in with the Wildcats. Every time I go back there, bring back some great memories, but not even with the President's Cup. My first time there as a 16 years old, the year of the Mem Cup in Moncton, the town was buzzing pretty hard. I was really happy that they brought me as a 16 years old to live that atmosphere during the playoffs against Quebec Ramparts in the finals, and then make me live the feeling of a Memorial Cup, which, you know, I had the opportunity to live back again at 20 years old. So, but all my years was so different. My first year at 17 years old, we were coming off, you know, a big team with the Mem Cup, but we surprised a lot of people with John Torchetti as our head coach. And then didn't get drafted that year, even though I had a high expectation. And then coming back at 18 years old was kind of my first year. I was put to be as a number one role, and went with Danny Flynn, who I used to know from my time as a 16 years old with Ted Nolan. It was great to me, but we had a really, really bad team. I believe we finished dead last that year. It was really hard, but I had a really good season. I played with Team Canada in that Subway Cup against Russia. Great experience. I had the pleasure, the chance to meet Jonathan Bernier, who gave me some tips while he was, you know, just a first round pick and coming down from LA his first 10 games and back to Lewiston. So it was a really good time. And then at 19 years old, well, I think it was a pivotal year for me in my career. We had a really good team, you know, great group of guys. I just can remember, you know, Randy Cameron, who was drafted the same time that me. We've been known each other for 3 years. You know, it was just great. I had a really good year, winning the MVP, breaking some records. But we got our, you know, our work cut off a little bit short in the playoff. Got beat in the second round by the Rimouski Oceanic, who then hosts the Memorial Cup. And then at 20 years old, started my career in Adirondack in the AHL. And, you know, next thing you know, Leighton is traded from Carolina to Philly. And they want me to get a trophy back in junior. And as soon as I get back, yeah, Danny Flynn goes to work, makes a lot of trades, and we go all the way. And, you know, I live my kind of my young dream of winning the President's Cup in my last game in the Moncton Coliseum, which is now, you know, not there anymore, but I'm really proud of the accomplishment I was able to make in Moncton.
So not to put words in your mouth, but when you say you'd like to live here, like in a coaching role as a goalie coach, or in a team type role, or just, you know, continuing to do what you're doing with your agency?
No, it's just, you know, I like the city. I like the people. The fans were unbelievable. I think Moncton, you know, it's near from everywhere. You got a little bit of a bigger time in Halifax. You can go in Charlottetown, can go in St. John. You know, it's really in the middle of everywhere. People down there are great. You know, we have more of a French community in Dieppe, more of a English one in Moncton and Riverview. No, people are great down there, and I feel that you know, living close to Montreal now, it's more of a business type of living, which, you know, down in Moncton, well, they get the same kind of business, but everyone is more relaxed and more with open arms. I remember the first training camp I did at 16 years old. I was driving my car, and then I see a yellow flash you know, for people for walking across the streets. So what this guy is doing? he's walking down the street. I'm driving there, and because in Montreal, like if you try to do that, you need to be a really good sprinter or a really good runner if you wanna, because there's no way that people were gonna let you go across the street. So I know, and all that kind of nice thing. The people are great. I even have a lot of connection friends who are not hockey related in Moncton, and every time I go there, it just makes me feel special.
You don't have to sell me on it. I moved here from Alberta, so I completely understand what you're talking about. But
since you kind of brought up the driving around here, when you first drove in Moncton and you saw somebody turn right on a red light, what'd you think of that?
Well, it was something special for sure. But you know, I was a young driver at the time, so you know, my drives were really similar every day. You know, to the my billets to the rink, school billet, and it was pretty much the same kind of drive I had to do over and over for 4 years. So it doesn't really too complicated for me.
We had Carnal Garland on a while ago, and Jeremy asked him what some of his favorite eating establishments were. Do you have a favorite spot that you pregame meal spot that you would go to all the time?
Well, I would say that my billet was making outstanding food. So I would rather, you know, stay at my billet to eat than go to the restaurant. But I believe that, I don't think it's Outback. It's a steak place. Montana's, is that it?
Yeah, yeah. Montana's is still around, yeah.
Yeah. Well, funny story again. Because I know when it's your birthday, like they come to you with moose hat. And then the year that with Mika Sears' first training camp, because we represent Mika. And in his first camp, me and my partner, we went to Moncton and watch him play. And we did go to eat there. But he didn't know about that that. You know, that special thing. So I told the server, hey, it's his birthday today. So they came in with that big moose hat. We still have the picture, and sometimes we just text each other with that funny picture. But no, it was one of my favorite spots. And like, believe it or not, when I was in Moncton, I didn't like, I didn't eat you know, lobster, shrimp, anything like that. So any seafood, I had no taste for that. But now when I met my wife and she had a young daughter that she was eating everything, she made me shrimp, lobster and everything. And I told her, hey, I lived 5 years or 4 years in Moncton where I could eat plenty of it and didn't take the advantage of that.
That's funny. I'm kind of the same way. I'm not a big seafood eater, but I'm slowly getting used to it now that I'm here. For fans that have been with the show since the beginning, I had you on early on in the days of this show, and we talked about your playing career after. Just, you know, you went from Moncton, you got drafted by the Flyers, Adirondack, you played in Greenville, you played in Rapid City, Norfolk, and then you went and played overseas, and we were talking 59 games that you played in 08-09 for Moncton was a lot, but you played almost, if I remember correctly, you played every game but one when you played overseas. Is that correct? Like, is, as a starting goaltender, I can just imagine that's what you want is to play. So just kind of talk about your time, you know, after Moncton and what you've been up to.
So after my time in Moncton, you know, after I get drafted, you know, I won the MVP, so I believed it was time for me to move on in the NHL. Like every player that I want to play in pro, they want to, even if it's their overage, and I was really treated good in Moncton, you want to play to the next level because your number one goal is to play in the NHL. So, but they just signed Chris Pronger to an extension, the Flyers did. So they told me, look, Nick, We're gonna give you one-way AHL deal. Come play with us in Adirondack, and then next year we'll sign you to an entry level 3 years, and then make your way up front now. So I said, okay, perfect. And then we win the President's Cup. I was sixth during the Mem Cup, and I didn't play really good. So during the summer, they say, look, Nick, we're really sorry, but we just signed that Russian kid for entry level, and we're kind of packed. So we would offer you another AHL deal, but to play, you know, AHL and ECHL. And that Russian kid name was Sergei Bobrovsky.
He turned out all right.
I said, well, okay. So I was really mad. I was disappointed because I felt that the past 2 years in junior, I did, you know, pretty much everything I was possible to do besides winning the Mem Cup. And then I go there, had a really good first rookie year. I still broke the records for most win by a rookie in the Greenville franchise history. And then the year after, the Flyers doesn't offer me any contracts. So I go with the New York Islanders training camp, and I go down and back in Greenville, go up and down with the Bridgeport Sound Tigers with Kevin Poulin, who was the number one goalie at the time. And then the NHL lockout come in. For me, I knew it was going to really hurt me as a goalie, because I can see all those AHL and NHL goalies going down to fill up those spots at the AHL and ECHL level. And at the time, I was with a relationship, which is my wife now, and she had a 6-year-old daughter. And I just decided that it was best for us to live up the European lifestyle with the family and everything. So I've signed in Dundee and the IHL, the UK league. And you know, I don't know nothing about Europe at that time. So I told the GM, I said, look, I better play the majority of the game. He said, don't worry, you will play all of the game. I said, what? He said, yes, because the number two here, it's only if you are injured, because you play every game. I said, okay. And the schedule in the UK, it's only Saturday, Sunday, but home and away every time. Sometimes I had to drive, let's say Saturday, drive 12 hours, and then come back at 6 or 7 a.m. on Sunday morning and play at 4.
Wow.
So it was crazy like this. But I played 51 games on a 52-game schedule. And because the last game, we were out of the playoff at that time. So I decided to give the kid a game and in front of his hometown. And he still remember it and thanked me again for that gesture. No? So for me, it was nothing. And then the year I was named on the second all-star team of the league, and then signed in Denmark, where my daughter was born. Great experience down there. The healthcare was unbelievable. And then the year after, my daughter, but my wife's daughter, she was 8, and the school was getting hard because she had to go through French school, English school, and then in Denmark, Danish school, and she learned English and Danish in 2 years.
Wow.
So it was really impressive to see her do that. But we knew that it was time for her to simplify the school. And we decided to go in the Rouen, one of the top organizations in France. I made a lot of money as well. So it was a win-win for everyone. And then at one point, I see a lot of goalies that I used to play against in the QMJHL, and I used to be like better than them at that time, and they make their NHL debut. So just think a few names: Jake Allen, Kevin Poulin, Louis Domain, and I can name a lot of other names. And my wife tell me, why don't you go back? I said, well, but you know, I'm 26 years old, and once you're gone, it's really hard to go back. And I've lived the ECHL way. It will be a tough road to go back. He said, yes, but you will never be able to sleep really, you know, well until you do it. So I said, okay. So next thing you know, after my season in Rouen, we won the French Cup champion. I decided to come back with in Norfolk, where the head coach is Eric Veilleux, who used to coach Shawinigan and Baie-Comeau before. So he gives me a chance, and I run with it. And by that time, Adam and Jeremy, I was my own agent. At that time, I represented Jonathan Arbon, who played with the Wildcats, Alex Dubo, who was with the Wildcats. So I was, you know, my own agent at that time. So I got myself a training camp and everything. And so at the middle point of the season, Eric Veilleux bring me in his office and asked me, like, have you contacted a few teams? I said, well, not really, but I knew that I've sent an email to all the assistant GMs in the NHL to tell them how great of a season I had in the East Coast, and I was ready to make the jump and everything. So I said, well, good thing, because you just get, well, I got two things for you. You just name a player of the week, and next thing you know, Julien Brisebois of the Tampa Bay Lightning will give you a call to offer you an AHL contract. So I was like, oh my God. So I start crying, because going from France to back to the game in the AHL was a really big step for me. So, and then next thing you know, Julien gave me a call and offered me an AHL deal. And he says, hey, we'll see during the summer. He offers me another AHL deal with the NHL camp. So I go there, you know, my first NHL camp since back in with the Islanders. I was really nervous. I was, you know, okay camp. So the next thing, the next year after, Julien asked me, look, Nick, do you want to make the NHL? I said, yes. He said, okay, come in better shape than Andrei Vasilevskiy, and you have a shot. So I said, oh, my God. Like,
those Russian guys are really killing you, eh?
I know. So I said, okay. But I came prepared. I had a great camp. And who's back in the Lightning organization? Michael Layton. Oh. So I said, okay. I come to camp. I had my best camp ever. My best camp, my best training camp. And my goalie coach, Franz Jean, who used to be my goalie coach as well in Moncton, he said, oh my God, Nick, like, you're on top of your shape, and exhibition games, you know, inter-squad, you're nothing, you're not like, letting you nothing in. So, no, I was doing really good. So, after Julien comes in my office, like every AHL player, I believe it was the time to go in the AHL. He said, look, Nick, you've earned one extra week because you've been better than Michael Layton. So we will send him and Connor Ingram in the AHL, and you stay with us with Vasilevskiy and I can't remember the other one, the backup. So I said, Peter Burak. So I said, okay. And he said, the next thing you know, you will play the first exhibition games. So that was my first ever NHL exhibition game, even if I did four NHL camp before. So my dream came true. The year of my retirement, I played one NHL game exhibition. I know it's not a regular season, but for me, it meant the world, and Julien knows it also, but I came prepared, and that's why I'm proud, and that's how it went from after Moncton.
So you mentioned you started to represent yourself as an agent. Now you're part of Propulsion. You represent Mika Seer, here in Moncton we know very well. The Q draft is less than a month away. As an agent, you know, who are some of the prospects that you represent for this upcoming Q draft, and tell us a little bit about them.
Well, we represent, me and my partner Etienne Lafleur, we represent three players for the upcoming Q draft. First one is defenseman from Maega, Carl Etienne Michel, great steady defenseman, who plays a simple game, but very efficient. Very low maintenance of the ice. Great player. He was ranked, I believe, in the third start of the third round. So, you know, but I know there's a lot of teams interested in him, talking about maybe a late round surprise or start second. So hopefully it is. But, you know, he's a great guy coming from a great family. He's, good, very good prospect. The second one we have, it's Jacob Lafontaine, who played in Three Rivers, who had a, you know, kind of a unfortunate season. He got injured to his wrist, which made him sidelined for almost 2 months. But he was named, as a 15 years old, he was named assistant captain from his head coach, you know, in midway through the season. So it shows his, you know, his character and his leadership. He's a great guy. A great centerman who's comparable to maybe Patrice Bergeron. Really good two-way, but defensively he's impeccable. He's ranked, I believe, in start fifth round. And we got Charles-Édouard Grenier, who was from most of head scout in the queue, the top midget espoir players in Quebec. So he's a, you know, great centerman who can play winger or winger that can play centerman. He can play also left, big body, who likes to be physical, you know, great compete level, relentless, kills a penalty, but big body in front of the net also. So he's going to be a player to watch. So we've had several interests from a lot of teams for all these three players, and hopefully it can be interesting to add a draft.
When you say several GMs, you know, any ones by the with the initials RT calling you these days?
Well, right now it's more the job of the head scout to do the interview. I know a lot of them did the second interview or Zoom interview with more of the management than the GM, but. Yes, Moncton spoke to all three of them. So, just if it's the question you're asking, I'm gonna give you the answer.
I'll remember that when I'm putting together my mock draft. But how busy is your phone right now? You know, I assume like a lot of scouts and that are calling you. Like, what kind of questions are they asking agents like yourself?
Well, I think the right now, if we talk about the QMJHL players for the draft, they've seen the players, you know, they've seen him so many times. So they don't really ask me how he is as a player, because everyone has their own opinion and everyone has their own need as an organization. But they ask me more about, you know, what is he like to do off the rink, what's their parents like, how's his does he like school, how's his grades. So that's more of the question. They try to know more about the person than the player, and I think it's really important, because if you want to win a championship, you will have, you know, to deal with 25 different personalities in person. So as long as you have low maintenance players and player with great leadership that you are not going to have to carry to the gym to do some extra overtime or, you know, so that's the kind of question they're asking me. But for me, I try to represent the same type of player that I was as a player. So, you know, people with, but you've seen, you know, Alex Dubois was one of them. Mika Sir is one of them. I try to, you know, represent as much as possible the same type of player that I was, with a high compete level, work ethic, great leader, good person of the ice. So, you know, that's the kind of player and person that the management of a team who wants to win a championship are looking for.
I was going to say very committed. So yeah, for you to mention yourself and, you know, Mika and Alex, you know, those, that just describes them to a T.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, this has been fun. I want to thank you for doing this. You know, the first time, you know, chatting with us at the draft, again, coming on for this, 25th anniversary kind of show. Thanks a lot, Nick. You've been a big supporter and we really appreciate, taking the time of what I can imagine is a busy time with your agency as well as your family. So Thanks a lot for doing this, man.
Well, hey, thanks to you guys. You're doing a great job. Congrats again on your 100 show. It was a pleasure. And I remember even last year, I had a chance to meet you. You're great guys. And I know that the Wildcast fans are really fortunate to have a podcast like this. So keep doing a great job. And hopefully we can talk before the 200th. So.
For sure. And if you're in town, we'll catch up as well. Get you in the studio.
Yes, for sure. I would be really happy.
All right. Thanks, Nick.
Thanks, Nick. Take care.
Thanks, guys.
Now I'm pleased to be joined by the 2019-2020 Guy Carbonneau Trophy winner for best defensive forward. He was number 91. Bo Grew. Bo, how are things going?
Pretty good, pretty good. Still in quarantine here in Montreal with my dad. We're trying to keep ourselves in shape, but it's pretty hard sometimes to motivate ourselves.
Yeah, I can see that when you go from practicing and staying in shape all the time to all of a sudden it being taken away. I can't imagine how hard that is. Have you been binge watching anything? Are you a Tiger King fan or?
Not really, honestly. We watch a lot of Netflix movies, but right. I haven't watched a Tiger King yet. But it's for sure something that I'm gonna watch in the future.
Yeah, it's something. I'll just leave it at that. So I brought you on for kind of a special reason, but before we get to that, you know, just ask you some questions about the season. You know, first overall pick in the queue by Halifax, played 3-4 years there. Now you're traded to a division rival, a hated rival. Just talk about how weird that was, even though you're friends with most of the guys off the ice. Just how weird was that going from Halifax to Moncton?
Yeah, it was really weird, honestly. Especially getting drafted from Halifax, when you're there from 16 to 19 years old, you learn to hate the Wildcats and all the other division rivals very, very bad. So it was weird for me when my GM announced that I was getting traded to the Wildcats. But as soon as I got there, they opened me with open arms, and I felt like I was part of the family for a lot of years. So now my 3 months with the Wildcats were very, very nice.
So when you look back on your short time here, you know, all the fans embraced you with open arms. It was pretty easy to embrace a player like you. You know, when you look at the team that we had this year that had the possibility to make a long run, and your Mooseheads team last year that went all the way to the final, did you see a lot of similarities in this group?
Yeah, the two teams were extremely similar, especially up front. Like last year, our first two lines were unreal, probably the best two lines in the league, and even our third line last year was probably the best shutdown line in the league. And if we compare it to this year we had Kovanov, McKenna, and Pell together with me, Forts, and Mika, or Zach LaRue in our third line was getting really, really, really good. They had a lot of chemistry together. So, and defensively, last year, we had probably one of the best scores in the league, if not the best. Same thing for this year, especially when you're adding guy like Jaden McIsaac and guys like Tristan DeYoung, who are really good, especially defensively, and George Spence, really good offensively, and our goalies. Last year, Gravel was really good during the playoff, and Rod this year was probably the best goalie in the league.
Yeah, there's not a lot of people that listen to this show that won't not agree with that statement. When you were brought in, I mean, you can score, you can put the puck in the net, but when you were here, I mean, you took all the big draws, you quarterbacked the power play, you did a lot on the penalty kill, and it shows, obviously, winning best defensive forward. Is that something that you wanted to work on coming into this season, was just being an all-around 200-foot player?
Yeah, for sure. My first 2 years in the league, I put a lot of emphasis on playing defensively, and I kind of forgot about my offensive game. And I think it's my stats are relating to that. And the last 2 years, I've been working a lot on my offense and as well as my defense. And my stats are really, really improved, and same thing for this year. I think 78. So was really happy with that. And especially coming to the Wildcats, a really offensive team, a lot of skills. I wanted to bring as much defense as defensively.
So I'm not sure how, you know, obviously I've never played the game. Second round pick with Anaheim. Are they in contact with you throughout the season, just letting you know, like, you know, what you need to work on, what you're doing well? Or have they been in contact with you since this COVID situation, just trying to update you as best they can? Or
yeah, during the season, after every game, they send a form that you have to fill out on how your game, how do you think you played your game, how your energy level was, what you think you did well, what you think you did bad. And sometimes probably once a month, I'd say they come to see all their prospects and their teams, and they go out to dinner with you. They ask you how you're doing, how's the season and everything. What you think you need to improve? During the last month, they contacted, I think, all their prospects, and they were asking what they were doing for training. What was their plan for the summer? And they haven't talked about anything about the training camp, because obviously they don't know what's going on. There's a lot of unknown right now. So they just want to see if we're doing the right thing during those tough times.
So they're not giving you like workouts to do. You're just kind of on your own doing things you've been doing all along.
Well, I did. For example, for me, they know my trainer very well. My trainer has been giving me workouts during the quarantine, so they know what I'm doing. And Don, I'm strength coach, and my strength coach are in contact, so they know exactly what I'm doing.
Ah. Oh, all right. Well, that's something that I would never know how much actual contact. You think that, you know, maybe they check in once a month or whatever, but to learn that they're making you fill out forms pretty much after every game is, I mean,
yeah.
They invest in you, so they gotta know everything, right?
Yeah, that's true.
So, you know, I reached out to you to see if you wanted to be on this episode, and the reason was 4 days ago you had an Instagram post about your friend's daughter, Ivy, who was recently diagnosed with leukemia, and going through everything I went through, it got me, because no parent should have to deal with that. So, just talk about, what you're doing with the Instagram and, just how you got involved.
Yeah, well, like you said, I called one of my friends, one of my teammates that I played 3 years with, Jackson Cheney, a couple of weeks ago, and he was at the hospital, and asked him, like, what are you doing there? And he told me that his daughter got diagnosed with leukemia, so it was really hard for me, and I just wanted to know. I asked him how I could help him, and told me he was organizing a fundraiser with his family. So I thought it was a good idea. So I reached out to the Wildcats, to the Moose, and a couple of my friends, and we organized a fundraiser for Ivy. And we actually got a lot of donations, and we're still waiting on some more. And we're pretty happy with the result, and we hope the best for Ivy.
Yeah, I just went on the website while you were chatting from your Instagram. People can find it through your bio, correct?
Yeah, the link is in my bio, and you just click on it, and you're gonna see a cute little Ivy on the front page. And
she is cute.
There's gonna be a sign says "Donate now." You just click on it, and it's very easy. You put any amount you want, and honestly, any amount helps a lot. It makes a huge difference. So. I'm encouraging people to go out there and take a look.
Yeah, you guys got 1,630 of your 1,700 goals. So is there a time where, you know, the donations are going to end, or is it just when you hit your goal, or just keep going and continuing this until whenever?
Well, she's starting her treatment the 31st of May.
Okay.
So it's probably when the fundraiser is going to end.
Okay.
So, but we still have a lot of time on it too. We're, like I said, we're still waiting on some more donations from people. So now we're very close to our goal, and actually the 31st of May, me and a couple of my friends are gonna shave her head just to support her, just to make her feel like she's not alone in that situation. So if other people want to do it, they're very welcome to join us.
They always say hockey players are good people, and yeah, that it's things like this that that really prove that hockey players are good people. So if you guys want to donate, go to Instagram, Dr. Gru, click on his bio. Our podcast will give something to this. We'll donate a little bit to it and try to share it as much as we can for you.
Thank you. I appreciate it a lot.
I won't shave my head because I look funny, but I'll donate some.
Yeah,
we'll donate some cash.
Too, but it's a good cause.
Yeah, it's a. We're, if you're gonna do it, this is the kind of cause to do it for. So, I don't want to take much of your time up. So, really appreciate you joining us on this episode, Bo, and good things in all the future endeavors.
Thanks a lot. I appreciate it.
That'll do it for part one of the 100th episode. Just too massive to fit everything into an hour. Want to thank Nick Riopel, Bo Gru for taking the time to chat with us today. And don't worry, tomorrow's episode will be just as great as today's. As we're going to have Connor Garland and Steve Johnson to talk about their time as teammates for the Wildcats, as well as what they've been up to during COVID and, you know, after their Wildcats tenure. So, again, thanks for downloading and supporting this show. Because of all of you guys, we're at 10,000 downloads in 100 episodes. So I can't thank you enough. We will see you tomorrow for a second part to our 100th episode. See you tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to another episode of the Wildcast Podcast. Follow us on social media at Moncton Wildcast.